Hi, I'm Heidi. I'm a mum of one, and I'm on a mission to understand the science of baby sleep. Not just what they do, but why they do it. What's going on in their brains when they sleep, and when they don't. Brought to you by PureFlow, the experts in baby sleep. This podcast will help you understand the whys, and hopefully find a little bit more patience in the middle of the night. Jo Parkington has been a midwife both in the NHS and privately for 30 years. Over that time, she's supported many women through pregnancy and the early months with their babies and helped families get off to a great start. So thanks so much for joining us today, Jo. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
That's all right. Well, as it's Safer Sleep Week at the moment, today we really wanted to talk about safer sleep and what that's all about and what this week is trying to raise awareness of, what the purpose of it is, and how parents can really feel as confident as possible that they're doing the best they can to create a safer sleep environment for their new babies, because obviously it's a very daunting thing when you're suddenly handed a baby to look after for the first time. Speaking of experience. So to kick off then, as you are obviously a midwife from a fantastic medical background, I'd love to hear from you. What is SIDS?
Okay, so SIDS is sudden infant death syndrome. Many years ago, they used to call it cot death. So if you're talking to your grandparents or your parents, they may know it more as that. But we changed it to SIDS because they wanted to move away from the fact that it just happened in a cot. You know, SIDS can occur in other environments. So SIDS is defined when there is unknown cause for the death of an infant. And that means that we don't know why the baby has potentially died. So that's the definition.
Okay. And so obviously it's something that, you know, as a new parent, you suddenly hear about a lot. Should parents be worried about it? Is it quite common?
I don't think we should raise fear, and that's the problem sometimes. Parents obviously get very anxious and nervous about lots of things, and this is just another one that compounds. Am I doing everything right? Is this wrong? Am I failing in some way? So I think we should put it in perspective, and sometimes raising awareness is more what we should be doing as opposed to raising fear and anxiety levels. So for me, it's really important that we put it in perspective. So in 2019, I think, which was the last credible data that we had, 196 SIDS was recorded. And if we put that in perspective, the UK, the United Kingdom, has 700,000 births a year, almost 700,000. So we just need to just put things in perspective a little bit, but equally, we do need to raise awareness to parents about the potential of SIDS and the impact of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I know myself, as a new mum, there were plenty of things to suddenly make me anxious that I'd never even thought about before. So we want to make sure that people aren't unnecessarily anxious, because obviously in the grand scheme of statistics, it's a relatively small incidence, although of course we'd rather none of those babies lost their lives, of course. However, I think the message here for Safer Sleep Week is that there are things that parents can proactively do to help reduce the risk of SIDS. And so you have an opportunity there to just proactively make sure you're doing all the right things.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I think this campaign exists and this week exists, because if parents have that knowledge, then they can do that little bit to help themselves, which is so good, because so many things that you're anxious about as a parent, there's not a lot you can change.
Sure. And the thing is, most of the things that you can do to reduce the risk, we should be doing anyway to improve the health and well-being of yourself and your baby. Mm-hmm. So one of the main causes of sudden infant death is if a trigger, if you like, not a cause, an association to SIDS is smoking. Wow. And obviously smoking, whether it's the mother or the father, smoking in the home, it is, if you can stop smoking, is a benefit to you and your partner as well, as reduces the risk of SIDS. So it's all part of a whole, a holistic approach really to the health and wellbeing as a family. And then obviously there's other things that we advise, like lying baby on the back, being aware of temperature, having a firm surface. They're things that you can proactively do something to minimize the risk as well. But the two main indicators for, the risk of increasing the risk of SIDS is smoking in the family home, that's mother or father, and alcohol use. So making sure that, you avoid being at risk yourself, and therefore you're not as aware of baby and baby's movements, etc., or baby's sleep position. So there are two really important factors that would also help your own well-being as well as reduce the risk.
You mentioned temperature there. So I know that the recommended room temperature for a baby is 16 to 20 degrees, which can feel quite chilly. Yeah. So is that because, babies, if they overheat, it increases the risk of SIDS?
Yeah. So again, another indicator or factor that they've found. So it's important as well to understand that all these things that we talk about, whether it's smoking, lying baby on the back, temperature control, they are what's known as triggers. So not every baby that gets warm at night is going to get sick. So we need to be really careful, but it is a risk factor that if a baby overheats, it can be a risk factor. So babies don't have the ability to regulate their temperature as we do. It's all around parasympathetic nervous system. So baby's temperature, they rely on us to support them in how to do that. They can't shiver, for example. They don't sweat as much as we do if they overheat. So that's why it's important that we can regulate the room temperature. It's really easy. It's an easy thing to do. Regulate your room temperature and then make the baby comfortable by adding layers to what they may wear. So things like maybe a vest, a baby grow, a sleep suit. They're the types of things you can help to keep the baby warm as opposed to the room temperature.
Okay. And as this is a Pure Flow podcast, it'd be remiss of me not to mention here that obviously using a baby sleep bag that has a TOG rating can make that much easier for a parent, because they can then follow that what to wear guidance and very easily see if my room is this temperature, I should use that TOG of baby sleep bag with this clothing underneath it. It's all kind of pre-tested and prescribed so that it gives you a great starting point for making your baby temperature comfortable. Of course, absolutely, every baby is slightly different. Your baby might run a little hot or a little cold and you can adjust accordingly. But, that kind of is really helpful to parents in taking control of that potential risk factor.
Yeah, and one of the other risks is using loose bedding, so sheets, blankets. There is a risk that they may cover baby and baby's head. So using a sleep suit, like a Pure Flow grow suit, a baby sleep bag.
What we technically call it, a baby sleep bag.
A baby sleep bag is perfect to make sure that baby is warm. You can regulate that temperature well, and also baby's not at risk of going further down the cot or anything that may.
No blanket over the face. You mentioned earlier about baby sleeping on their back. Now, I know there was a big campaign probably 20 years or so ago now, but run by celebrity Anne Diamond, which was the Back to Sleep campaign that she did with the Lullaby Trust, because at that time it was really common for people within the UK to sleep babies on their front. And in fact, I think that may have even been the guidance at that time, was that babies would sleep on their front.
Yes.
There was a massive change in parental behaviour, and the guidance all changed to putting babies on their backs. And since then, that has really helped in terms of decreasing the incidence of SIDS, as I understand it. But again, it's one of those things where if you speak to your granny, she might talk about cot death, and she might also recommend baby sleeps on their front because that was how they did things in their day. A question, so the guidance now is for baby to obviously sleep on their back. But a question that I hear a lot from our mum community at PureFlow is that once the baby starts rolling, they will often roll from their back onto their front. And then there's a period of time when they can't roll back yet because they're just not at that developmental stage. So therefore, does that mum then have to be awake all night watching that baby and flipping it back every time? Or are they okay to stay on their front if they get themselves into that position? How do you deal with this?
Yeah, and again, it's a really great question. And it's often a question we get asked by mums, because as soon as baby starts to learn to roll, you're absolutely right. They learn to roll from back to front quicker than they can learn to roll from front to back. So it's always, parents get really anxious around that. It's important to also balance the risk. As baby gets older, the risk of SIDS is highest the younger the baby is. So as baby starts to get older, the risk of SIDS also reduces. Mm-hmm. And it's not coincidental that baby starts to roll as baby gets older. It's roughly in the 4-month stage, older than that, as babies roll and move in that way. And the risk of SIDS reduces after 6 months. Mm-hmm. That's when the data tells us that. Certainly do not stay awake at night. Those babies are still waking up at night anyway. Mm-hmm. If you've got a baby sleeping through the night for 12 hours, fantastic, but it is very, very unusual that a baby that young is all, so you're waking up anyway for the baby. So certainly I would not be advising women or partners to be watching baby sleep and being ready at any second to move them if they get in a position. But again, these safe sleep suits do help to keep babies in the same position. And also, if babies are put on their back from birth, that's where they're used to sleeping. That's a position that they've got familiar with and they're used to. So normally babies will stay on their back during their sleep pattern. They only start to move when they start to wake, when they come out of a sleep in that sleep pattern, they're only moving as they start to wake. And if they start to wake, they're normally making a noise.
Yeah.
And you're attuned to that as a mother anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do remember that few weeks where my son kept flipping onto his front, and then you get that noise where he's frustrated because he can't get
Up. Exactly.
So, yeah, you're right. That would likely wake me up straight away. And then I could, I'd pick him up and deal with him anyway, right? And then put him back to sleep on his back, as you always do. Another question we get quite a bit, and even from those with younger babies than that, is they would say, well, my baby seems to sleep better on their front, so can I not just have them sleep on their front because they sleep better?
Yeah. Well, we obviously can't enforce the advice. Women have to do what's right for them and your family, etc. The advice strongly supports the evidence, and the data strongly supports lying on the back is the safest position for baby to be. So that's what we advise. If you found that baby sleeps better on the tummy, you certainly shouldn't be leaving baby on their tummy at any time, whether in the day or at night. It should only be on the back.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what can parents do then to minimise the risks of SIDS? We've talked about them sleeping on their backs, controlling the room temperature, trying to cut out cigarettes, or being, drunk when they're with the baby.
Yeah.
Is there any other things that they can do to create a safer environment when the baby's arriving and sleeping?
From an environment perspective, I think we're covered in that, room temperature control, definitely not using loose covers and blankets. You know, you should place baby, if you are using a cot or some form of bassinet, etc., you place baby with the feet to the foot so that they can't move down underneath blankets. Don't put soft toys or bumpers or any other bedding in the cot. Keep it as clear as possible. So a firm mattress. They talk about a firm mattress. So don't put baby on a pillow, for example. Don't use pillows. So they're the basic things that you can do from an environment perspective. And keeping the home smoke-free is equally important. But there's two other things that we don't tend to focus on as much, because they're, in a way, they're very easy controllable things to do. So from a campaign's perspective, they're the things that you can really focus on and really encourage parents to be aware of. And it's really easy to follow, you know, keep the temperature off, don't put central heating on, those types of things. Easy. What we don't focus on is the fact that breastfeeding, and exclusively breastfeeding, is also one of the best things you can do to reduce risk. Wow. And that seems to be in the too hard to do box for professionals to deal with. Yeah. And I think it's really important, if we are raising awareness with parents, we're also raising awareness of the positive things you can do to reduce the risk. Mm-hmm. And two positive things are getting baby to full term, so having your baby after 37 weeks pregnant, and that's all about your own well-being. Being aware of your own health during pregnancy is really key and important, and we don't use the pregnancy period to really talk about that. If we encourage women to eat more healthily, you know, improve on their well-being so that they go to term to reduce the risk of SIDS, would that have an impact for some? We don't do that. Mm-hmm. And obviously the other one is exclusively breastfeeding. So there are two other things that women can really focus on, and the two really positive things for both their health and the health of their baby.
Fab, because it's really interesting, because so often we hear all these guidelines, we don't really know where they're coming from or if there's science behind them. And, you know, we know the Safer Sleep guidelines are research-led, evidence-based, based on, as you say, the correlation between certain environmental and behavioural factors and how that seems to correlate to the risk of SIDS and the incidence of SIDS, because of course when a baby does pass away through SIDS, there's, you know, very thorough investigation into everything that's happened there, so the data is there for the people who are, not me, the clever people, to come up with these guidelines. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear some more elements of it there that obviously from your medical background you know exist.
I mean, obviously any baby that's born early, any baby that has a low birth weight, they're at risk anyway for a lot of different reasons. So if we can support women with a healthy pregnancy and get to term, we're also removing the risk for other issues like SIDS. So it, none of these though are, it's really important, because again, women think, if I do that, I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'll do that, I'm okay.
Yeah,
none of these are an absolute, you know, it's not an absolute. Putting everything together improves the life cycles, the behaviors, everything, well-being, everything. So they're all good positive things to do regardless.
Absolutely.
And it's really important that we support parents with the advice and information. Because another really interesting, co-sleeping is always seen as an easy thing to hammer. You know, don't co-sleep, co-sleeping's a problem. So women go through real angst to try and find ways to not co-sleep, even though it's a very instinctive thing to do. Mm-hmm. And the main reason that women co-sleep with their children, with babies, regardless of how they choose to feed, is sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Sleep deprivation is the biggest reason that women will co-sleep or choose to co-sleep. But the evidence has shown that before birth, women, nearly everyone will say, I don't intend to co-sleep. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. And after birth, 75% of them choose to do so. Mm. So we know that regardless of the information, the evidence, when you have a variable like I actually haven't slept for 3 days, it's going to change what you do.
Absolutely.
And so we can only give the advice and support, and parents have to go with what works for them.
Yeah, I mean, I gather that the Lullaby Trust actually updated the Safer Sleep guidelines just in the last couple of years to include co-sleeping because of that, didn't they? So that,
yes,
as you say, the guidelines were always don't co-sleep, whereas now they've been changed to say, if you're going to co-sleep, then here is the safest way to go about that.
Absolutely.
How to reduce the risk associated with co-sleeping, because realistically parents are doing it, so let's make sure we're advising them to do it in the safest way possible.
Absolutely, yeah, because we can't, you know, we can't live everybody's life for them. You can only give advice and information, and it's up to those parents to choose the way that works for them. And there's other elements of well-being we have to take into account. You know, being so restrictive with our advice could put women into a mental health situation. You know, postnatal depression is on the increase, and not just in women but in men as well. So it's really important that we support the whole spectrum, whether it's physical as well as mental and spiritual. And culturally, parents have different cultural perspectives. Mm-hmm. And in some countries, babies co-sleep all the time. That's a cultural, it's not even a choice, it's cultural, that's what they do. Yeah. So giving advice on how to do something safely is a lot better than trying to sell you not to do it at all.
Yeah, exactly. And when that motherly instinct is telling you to do something, especially in the middle of the night, it's impossible to ignore at that point. Absolutely. And think, oh, but I read something that told me not to.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Really. And then they get so stressed, you know, their mental health goes the wrong way, because they're really worried they're doing the wrong thing. And we build this feeling of failure because, oh, I shouldn't have done that. It wasn't the right thing to do in so many cases. But it's really important that we just raise the awareness, we advise, but also support choices and ensure that we can help with safety as much as possible.
Great. So where can parents go if they want some more information about SIDS, safer sleep advice, you know, their individual circumstance with their child?
Well, I would say you first, hopefully you've got a relationship with a health professional that can really still advise and support. And particularly in pregnancy, you should have a midwife you can talk to. A midwife should be giving you this information anyway. And if they're not giving it at a time that it's on your mind, ask, you know, because quite often in pregnancy, we have set times that we talk about certain topics. And quite often, SIDS is not talked about until discharge, until you've had the baby and you're either going home or they're discharging you from care. So if you're pregnant now and it's on your mind now, raise the conversation with your midwife, with your health professional, and start finding out what their advice is, what information they give. But we are most of us have access to the internet. Google's amazing. What did we do without it? So some of the best sites to use are Lullaby Trust. Lullaby Trust has been around for many, many years and is a very viable resource, credible resource. The Lesh League is another one that came up with the Safe Sleep 7, which is a really easy way to remember things in the way. And also sites like PureFlow that sell products around sleep will have lots of information, whether it's blogs, podcasts like this, or they'll have links to really credible sources. So there is lots of evidence out there and information out there. And the NHS, obviously, the NHS.uk, Tommy's, all those sites have all the information. But it don't get bogged down, you know. Go to a credible source, stick with it, and then discuss it with your midwife or your health visitor, depending where you are in your parenting journey.
Yeah, and I think there's... I know we've discussed this on other episodes of this podcast. There's a lot of well-meaning advice from friends and family and people, you know, those that have raised children before you, which definitely has its place and is so valuable in terms of mental health and emotional support. But actually, the science, the research has developed and changed so much over decades, over generations. It's always worth going to the source, to the, you know, look for that sleep science. So that you know what the latest real evidence-based guidance is, and then you can take that advice you may be getting from other sources in your personal life and do with that whatever you like to do, but knowing what the current latest research is.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's important, though, when we talk about science and research, that we go to really credible sources. Yeah. It is a skill in looking at the research and understanding how they did it. There's a lot of methodology goes into some of these studies. And credible sources like the Lullaby Trust have either undertaken the research themselves or they are very, very expert at picking out the studies that apply.
That's right, yeah.
Because so a study, for example, a study done in Africa will not have the same implications as a study done in the UK. If you live in the UK, different cultures, different variables. So even looking at geography and where the studies are done is important. So, you know, definitely use credible sources, friends, family, etc. Brilliant. You should have that network. It's absolutely crucial to have a network, but equally it's crucial to be able to filter out what doesn't quite fit. And you can use your midwife or the other sites to help you determine whether it was or not.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Jo, for telling us all that. It's really useful information. I know a lot of people obviously rely on their midwife as a very credible source, but we get limited time with our midwife through the NHS. So it's fantastic to get a bit of your extra time today. I think if anyone has any questions off the back of this that they would like to ask a midwife, please do DM us on Instagram at PureFlow Sleep, and we'll be very happy to either pass them on to Jo or find someone else who can answer for us. And of course, maybe that makes a future episode of the podcast if you guys want to send in some questions. But thank you so much for your time, Jo. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for asking me, and take care.
Thank you, Jo.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Sleep podcast, brought to you by PureFlow. If you have any questions, send them to me on Instagram at PureFlow Sleep, and I'll find an expert to answer them for you. And if you need any baby sleep kit, head to pureflow.com to shop the award-winning range of baby sleep bags, cribs, swaddles, and more. Until next time, sleep well.